When you just don't give a shit anymore, it's That's So MLS. With myself, Nick Thornton, and with me as always is Andrew Bates. Well, I guess not with me as always. Said the 2 week hiatus.
You were with.
How you doing, Andrew?
You were briefly with me when you were in Cuba when you sent me the audio about Tony Chani.
That's true.
Welcome back to the program.
What great contributions from Ricardo. I was almost annoyingly impressed with how smooth everything went in my absence. Apologies if you started listening to the podcast during those two episodes and haven't heard from me before. My condolences, and thank you to Ricardo and to you as well.
We're all very happy to have you back in Canada.
It's good to be back. And what an interesting week it was for MLS.
Yes.
That I also had a little hiatus from. Couldn't have picked a more colorful week to reintegrate myself to Major League Soccer. Because, boy, was there some fireworks.
I was... one of the things that sort of came to me, and it's been all season, but, you know, the World Cup influenced it and a couple of weeks of results influenced it. Lots and lots and lots of stoppage time goals.
It was insane. Yeah, we'll get to those for sure. There's a couple of games where, the World Cup must have been inspiring people to pull off some last-minute heroics, and it's pretty wild.
Did you get a chance to see the grand new opening of DC United's stadium that they,
did I ever.
That they brought fireworks for?
Yep. Wait, do we want to start there?
Let's start there.
Do we have to?
Let's start there. It was a 3-1 win by DC United for Vancouver. Vancouver did not seem to have much. I was not, unfortunately, able to see it. See that game this week, but one of the stoppage time goals was a 94th minute screamer from Alphonso Davies that everybody is talking about.
Yes. Well, this kind of stemmed from earlier in the week. There was a press conference, and people were asking because clearly the media has seen scouts at just about every Whitecaps game. And everybody assuming they're looking at Alphonso Davies. And Carl Robinson, in a rare form of candidness, actually addressed it head on and said, yeah, there's lots of scouts looking at Alphonso Davies. So it's interesting because it very quickly moved into just a foregone conclusion that he's going to be gone in November. And this may not come as a huge surprise, and other folks have talked about it before, but one of the seeming targets is Liverpool because, of course, the Andy O'Brien connection is he serves as a talent scout for them now.
Right.
But it set kind of an interesting tone then for going into a game against the worst team in the league, opening up a brand new stadium, arguably the steepest stadium in MLS. And, of course, the unveiling of their new eye candy / foot candy, Wayne Rooney. So it's a weird kind of tone to the game.
Has anybody described Wayne Rooney as eye candy before?
That's why I was trying to think of, like, do I say, like, I don't want to say, like, trophy wife. I was trying to think of, like, what's something to refer to him as just being there to put bums in seats. Mm. And he wasn't quite the talisman on the day, but he certainly contributed when he was on the pitch. But It was a weird game because from the early stages, Vancouver didn't actually look that bad.
Yep.
And Yamil Assad's goal that got the game going, and I believe it was just before the 20th minute.
20
is even around the
27.
Mark. Sorry?
27.
27th minute. There's really not much you can do about it. Yes, somebody could have closed him down, but, you know, Assad did that kind of thing at Atlanta. It's the kind of thing he can do. So I was sort of like, okay, it sucks to go down on the road, but we've done it so many times. It's kind of a position the Whitecaps are used to putting themselves in. But it just begins to all fall apart a little bit. And Vancouver did have some good chances. They obviously capitalized on David Oestedt's often poor positioning, especially on set plays. And very nearly got some luck out of it.
Yeah.
Really able to test him a number of times. But Again, we could just hit repeat on every single conversation we've had about the Whitecaps. It's just a failure to execute, and then a failure for the midfield to step up and close down balls. I'm firm in my belief now, having Juarez and Felipe on the pitch as your central defensive mids is not effective, because neither of them is really a true center defensive mid. They're both kind of playmakers. You want either Felipe and Gazal, or Juarez and Tybert, or whatever combination, but those two on the pitch at the same time, there's just massive gaps in the middle. And everybody's dropping back to form a tight back line, a block of six, but then you're allowing players to step up and hit howlers from 25 yards out that we know DC United can hit.
This was the issue with the, I want to say the second Paul Arriola goal. The first one was just sort of like, you know, it goes through Rose legs, but the second one, it's like there's a kind of strategy being deployed, but it's the strategy you would deploy against a player that's 10 yards back. He's way too close for people to be giving him the amount of space that he had waiting for something to happen.
Yeah. You've got to get somebody in there to jockey him and make it difficult to pull off the shot. I think the first one too, De Jong just gets burnt by sticking out a back stray leg trying to stop the ball and is just left in the dust. And I don't know if he was just too tired to make the run or thought he could challenge, but De Jong's performances are just really beginning to pile up as proof that that back line is really pretty porous. And of course, bringing Waston back into the lineup isn't necessarily going to fix that. I thought Brian Rowe was shaky again after having some okay performances. I think he could have done better on a couple of those, but it's up to his teammates playing in front of him to shut down some of those shots. Yes, Alphonso Davies gets the late goal, dribbles through four guys to make something happen, but that's been the story all season, is when somebody does have a moment of magic, it's too little too late.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not, this isn't Alphonso Davies FC, it's Whitecaps FC. And it's great for the kid. He's got a bright future ahead of him. I believe he will find a European home come November, if it takes that long. But the team needs to remain focused. And as a fan, you know, I can be excited for Alphonso Davies and the future he has, but it's not really panning out for the Whitecaps at this point.
I think,
and we can't expect it all to be done in a moment of brilliance from a 17-year-old.
I think the concern, and maybe the closer it comes, because you're right, like the Whitecaps have slipped out of the playoffs during this time. It's worrying that they lost to a team that's in the position that DCU is, and I think that, you know, if you look at the lineup, it's pretty typical of some of the classic worst Vancouver lineups of the season with that Felipe Juarez thing. There has to be focus on how you get into the playoffs and how you deliver at that time. And maybe now that we're closer to the prospect of Davies getting something, we're slipping into this sort of Canadian sports fan mindset of getting that call up to Europe being the ultimate goal rather than a middle step or the beginning step on a separate journey, right? Like,
yeah. And sorry, I want to clarify, like, I don't want to take anything away from Alphonso Davies and his development. It's
of course
great
not
that he got that goal. He stepped up and made something happen because nobody else was. I'm not saying he should have done it sooner or anything like that. He's been fantastic for the team, but the focus has sort of been on his development. And it's like, well, but where's everybody else stepping up? He's done a great job and has risen to the occasion. But we need other players to do the same. And players who have many more years of experience haven't been able to turn the screw or put on that kind of performance.
Yeah. There's lots of...
Or have left it too late.
It's worth noting that it was surprising to me that that was only his third MLS goal, because he has performed so well.
Mm-hmm. He does lead the Whitecaps in assists, though.
Yeah, right, exactly. There are so many times when you look in games and you think, oh, he could have had that, or oh, he's, you know, creating so much, you know, forward momentum. And if this is the last Alphonso Davies season, it's kind of a perfect arc in terms of his evolution into that assist king.
Absolutely. And I imagine that's where you would see him playing in another club, is out on the wing, bombing balls into the box, because we know that he can get by other players. So he's come a really long way, and many of the criticisms we had of him early on in the season are they're things that he's been able to address. Not because we've brought them up, obviously, but the points in the game that he was weak in, he's certainly been able to come far in that. But ultimately, the Whitecaps just are not good enough at this point, and they're deservedly where they're at in the table, but they really did make a mess of this run of games against pretty beatable opponents. I used to include the next Seattle game in that beatable opponent category, but Seattle's begun to find their rhythm, and playing them away is always a challenge, and then we've got a really tough stretch of games for the rest of the season. So I feel like the Whitecaps really threw away the opportunity to get 6 or 9 points out of some really easy games, instead just came away with 3, and now have an enormous mountain to climb just to stay in playoff running, and don't look like a team that could beat any of the playoff teams right now as it stands.
Right now, it would. I hate to be one of those, you know, negative. I hate to be the sort of negative person that says, like, oh, it's better if we don't qualify because then we'll burn it to the ground. But, like, this configuration is probably, this lineup as fielded at that point is probably not going to make the playoffs. And if it made the playoffs, it would probably not contend.
No, I agree. And I don't think everything needs to be burnt to the ground, but, you know, the reality is while other teams this week have been making big moves, the Whitecaps signed 2 more homegrown players, which is fantastic. That's what you want. Mm. But there has to be some more ambition. And while I agree with a lot of people's assessment of, like, technically a lot of the pieces are there, they don't need to go and make a ton of moves, but there's some real weak points. And I honestly think one of the main ones is the coaching staff.
I'm always excited about new Canadian homegrown players. Don't get me wrong, but
yeah,
the timing. I'm well past wary of the Whitecaps' propensity to sign Canadian players to first team deals right before the Canadian championships and give them their only minutes of the season, and in some cases, the only minutes of their careers.
Yeah, well, and really, I think only one will be eligible. And it is great. It's the system working. It's what you do want to see. The reality is most of those players are 3 or 4 years out from making a first-team spot. A lot will be loaned out. We've seen it before. I mean, we've got great talent in Brett Levis and Marco Bustos and numerous other players that we've brought up through the system. I think, or maybe Brett Levis was a draft pick, but... Yeah, it's a little worrying. However, not as worrying perhaps as some of the other Canadian teams who just struggle to even score a goal or do much of anything.
Yeah,
you've got to feel at this point, getting beat by Orlando breaking its 9-game losing streak by beating Toronto FC. The writing is on the wall. And I even MLS analysts have now started saying, like, okay, well, they're not coming back from this one. This is not a team that's going to make the playoffs. DC United gets a huge win. They're the team behind Toronto. They also have 4 games in hand against Toronto. So I'm just going to say right now, there's no way that Toronto makes the playoffs. And this is another example of just a completely anemic midfield performance from Toronto. Forget the injuries. Forget whatever else. They have not found... Greg Vanney's tinkered. He's tried to find solutions and come up with nothing. And they're playing like the worst team in the league right now.
This is one instance where I really do advocate for... And I haven't always been this way because I think to this point we've always said that the idea of firing Greg Vanney is unthinkable. But I almost do advocate for blowing it all up at this point because they have already checked out. There's no more. You're right. There's not a chance. There's not a chance that they're going to qualify given the improvement of the teams around them, mm-hmm. and they are already waiting for next season. So you have nothing to lose at this point by really, like, you know, metaphorically slapping some players across the face and saying, "Pay attention, wake up, right?"
And that's the and that's where I think the real weak point of Vanny has been is, I mean, maybe he'll start to do it now because they really are out of the picture. But when you start to see good players have really poor performances, Giovinco's had little moments and come close. He came close again in this game, but bench him for a few games and give somebody else a shot. Bono's looked really shaky, really unsure of himself. I get the thing of, you know, you want to keep growing confidence in players who maybe are lacking it a little bit. But like you said, at this point, what difference does it make? Play some more young kids. You know, they're the ones that have actually been the only difference makers for Toronto this season, are the ones mm-hmm. who've shown up to play. So try different configurations, experiment a little bit. You know, this campaign is over, but just across the board, they've been poor. And it's interesting that Orlando gets the win, because we need to talk about Orlando winning, not just TFC losing again. Is that Justin Merrim and Joe Bendick were benched for this game.
Right.
For exactly the reasons that we're talking about, is their performances just haven't been good enough. And it's not saying they're not good players, but it's the coaching staff needing to make decisions about getting some different performances out and giving opportunities to players who maybe deserve it more. And they get rewarded for it.
Could you imagine a team last year deciding, oh, we're just going to put our backup in against Toronto?
That's our backup goalkeeper. Who will he be facing? Oh, Giovinco, a lot of free kicks from Gio. Yeah, but, and good experience for the kid. And I actually thought he had a great game.
What I was able to see looked from Giovinco offensively, kind of looked like petulant in a way, or frustrated. You know, like the sort of in your headness. It's like it's in a good position. The moves that he's executing are not like bad, but like he just does not exhibit the mentality of somebody who's going to score that.
No, and it is worrying to see players of that quality lacking the confidence or the checked outness or whatever it is. And it's up to the coaching staff to figure out a way of getting a performance out of them. But at this point, you know, it's been late May since Toronto really had a good all-around performance. Vanny's got to be rethinking things and rejigging them. The problem right now is he doesn't have the squad depth to do too much. But, yeah, bad news there. An early week game for Montreal saw them blanked by New York City FC. I watched this game and thought, fair enough. New York City FC is a far better team than Montreal. And about all you can say is they scored 3 goals and Montreal scored none because they had to do so much defending.
Mm-hmm.
But really sort of belies the recent run of form, the turning around that Montreal's been able to do. There's a lot of better teams than Montreal that would have gone in and gotten the same result against New York City FC away. So
I had here Bush. I thought I saw Bush take another hard hit against the post. I don't know if I'm just worried about him because in the last couple of weeks he landed on the small of his back on the crossbar. But protect Evan Bush at all costs.
Yeah, he's taken some knocks for sure, mostly from himself and his posts. But
he did great to hold out as long as they did. Again, this is one of those games where it's like, how do you say that the goalkeeper had a great performance in a 3-0 game? Well, you just can't be the shooting gallery. He did his best.
Yeah.
He did damn well, but there's a minimum amount of shots that you could take before.
And I actually felt like Montreal at points were trying to get themselves into this game, but that's such a narrow pitch. And New York City FC just moves so quickly. And has the speed and dynamics to get 3 goals out of pretty much any game. So I actually think Montreal did okay to just go and put on a decent performance. The scoreline doesn't indicate that. But good for them for making a go of it, at least. And we didn't see the Montreal sort of slumping of the shoulders and giving up that they've done in other situations. So that's positive to see. It seems like there is some positivity around the team. And then later on the weekend, we're able to go to San Jose and just pick 3 points off of them. And perhaps that's what they had in mind out of this week.
That was a great showing, especially because, you know, it shows that a little bit of improvement is not necessarily a mirage. That one loss is not going to derail it.
Absolutely, and it's showing some character that players are stepping up and going, okay, what can we get out of this season? And we've not been good enough. How do we begin to turn things around? And they're making little adjustments, and that's what I like to see, is rather than throwing everything out and trying to start again, they are, as we've suggested some other teams should do, they had some of the right pieces. So it's a case of trying to get the best out of their players, and they're beginning to do that.
The Piatti to Tider connection on 8 minutes is that partnership, I think you've really seen grown since the beginning of the season.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I say, but I think was Piatti got the second goal. It's one of the slowest goals I've ever seen from Piatti. Just like that ball was coming in with no pace, and the goalkeeper guessed the right side, and still somehow it went in, which is perhaps an indication of just how messed up the culture at San Jose is right now.
Yeah.
Some weird substitutions, but some drama on the sidelines. Players really not seeming to know what's being asked of them. And just the on-field chemistry is completely absent.
Now, what was that? I'd heard something about this. So they had a first half substitute of a healthy player that was then again substituted himself at halftime. Is that what I heard?
Yes. Yeah.
What happened?
That's what happened.
Nobody knows why. Nobody. What's the identity of the player? Fataya Lache. Anibal Godoy was taken off and Fataya Lache was put back on.
Yes, and then Lache came off. Yeah. And Lache was upset about getting subbed off and had a long chat with the coach and then shoved the coach as well.
Wow!
Yeah, so things are not looking super swell there. Where to even begin with what needs to change at San Jose? I think they're a team that's coasted on a certain culture for a number of years, mm-hmm. And certainly coasted on the success of Wondolowski, but Wondolowski's done a great job of trying to keep the focus on what they can do and what they can improve and taking responsibility for their own performances. But again, you can't put it all on one player, and even he's got to be frustrated at this point that people just aren't stepping up. And that seems to be... It seems to be a case of maybe losing control of the locker room a little bit.
Beyond Wondolowski, you have Danny Houston, who's great and definitely a piece that you could build around. He is 27. He's in a great position. I'm not opposed to their wingbacks, Shea Salinas and Nick Lima. I think that they're a source of strength. But other than those three players, I don't really know what you build this team around. I don't know what the core argument is for the growth of the side over the coming years.
I don't know either, and it really seems like they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to talk about the most electric match? Probably more for what happened after it than what happened in it.
Oh, are we gonna talk about your favorite lawn care enthusiast?
Yeah, we sure are. I forgot about the lawn care thing. Oh, Mike Petke is a colorful person. By now, I think just about everybody in MLS, even outside of MLS, knows that Mike Petke went on a post game rant about refereeing decisions and cursed on air. The update is today he's been suspended a further 2 games and fined $10,000. So a pretty hefty slap on the wrist. I'm actually surprised he didn't get suspended for more games to kind of send a message. But
the wording specifically, if I recall, was, you want to fine me? Fine me. I don't fucking care anymore.
No, close. His wording was, you want to fine me? Drain my bank account. I don't give a shit anymore. Which, for an MLS coach, $10,000 is not an insignificant amount of money.
That is true.
It's a big fine in the league. We don't see typically fines of that size to one person. Here's the thing that I find kind of interesting about this, is that I totally agree with the non-call, what should have been a red card, straight leg, studs up, tackle, early in the first half. I would be fuming as a coach as well that that's not immediately reviewed and that's not a red card. That's endangerment of a player. Justin Glad getting just stiffed by Quintero. I actually think Justin Glad needs to stay upright in that.
Yeah.
And Quintero has every right to claim his arm's length personal distance. And doesn't... He's not, like, driving it into Justin Glad. He's creating space for himself. The defender's got to get in a better position and stand him up. But he goes over too easily, and that leads to the second goal. I think it's Mike Peck. He's so fired up from the challenge, and then not having anyone listen to him about his calls for a foul on his on Justin Glad. That's when he gets fired up, and that's when he gets ejected. So I think it was kind of compounded things. But I don't know if you gleaned more from his comments than I did, but I wasn't actually clear of what he was asking for.
I kind of, like, okay, so I get it.
He had many criticisms, but I was sort of like, so what would you like to change beyond the fact that these two calls were missed?
Okay, so I would boil it down to two key points. And one of them is a conversation that I think you've heard of a lot of. One of them is a conversation that I think that you've heard a lot of, you know, throughout the World Cup, which is, why wasn't VAR used in this particular case? That's step one, is that, mm-hmm. that essentially I would say whether or not he said it outright, the implication that VAR should be used more widely, which I think is mm-hmm. kind of what the issue is with this whole debacle, which is, you know, I think the addition of VAR has really helped the game. It's tempered the game. It's certainly helped the World Cup. But, like, adding that little bit of justice, people they want just even more. They want even more. Give me now.
Which is interesting because people, I think even people like Mike Petke, before VAR came in, were advocating that this could be a huge problem, is that then you're VARing everything and the referee doesn't know what to do. It also seems like he wants a little bit more accountability from the referees, that there's no ability for the media or fans or players or coaches to really ask questions.
I would say what the issue with this is, so he tells a story about trying to tell the fourth official that one of his players is being targeted and being told, yeah, I think that we're aware of it. Jefferson Savarino. He says yes. Savarino's being targeted, and they say, we know, we're aware of it, and then he gets fouled a bunch more times. Yeah. I think that what he's trying to convey in his anger is this sort of disconnect where he is asking questions of the referee. The referee is not giving him an answer, and then he has to go out in front of the media after the game and answer a question to which he has no answer.
Right.
To which he has been given no answer, yeah. or no... And he says, you know, you get to talk to me. Why don't you get to talk to the referees? He wants the referees mm-hmm. out in front of a scrum answering all these questions. I don't know that's a great idea, but like...
I don't know either, but I get his point. At the very least, I do think that there needs to be a little bit more on-field accountability, whether that's from the fourth official or what, that it does seem like there's an inability for decisions to get communicated to coaches.
Mm-hmm.
That can often lead to sendings off. And I know Carl Robinson's brought that up before too, is he asks a question of a decision and he's told to shut up. Now, of course, we're not privy to what's the tone in which he asks that question.
I'm
sure not. Excuse me, sir. Could you possibly, I missed that. Could you come back and explain that call to me?
We were incredibly privy to the way in which Mike Becky asked that question.
Yeah, exactly. So I get the frustration. I don't know that I'm 100% on his side or 100% agree with what he's calling for, but he does make a good point that, you know, they missed the playoffs last season by one point, and he goes, you know, is tonight that game that makes us miss the playoffs? That being said, the call he's referring to on the non-call on Glad, I actually think he's wrong on that one. Sorry, Mike.
I did have it written, you know, is he fouled first, but... it's hard to say. You saw Minnesota win in this game. It was a great performance for them. Ibarra, now that the club has acquired a second Ibarra, Miguel Ibarra scored a goal just to prove who the original is.
And of all of the things that happened in this game, so Minnesota actually kind of almost blew this one. RSL actually found a way back into the game. quite late. And for all the attention that's been given to Mike Petke's post-game conference, very few people are talking about Adrian Heath's comments, which were scathing of his side. And an extremely frustrated Adrian Heath came out and basically called out his entire team and said, they're not listening to what I'm telling them, and there's certain players at this club that are just doing what they feel is right, and then we throw away 70 minutes of hard work. And then when asked about which players, he said, never mind, that's my business, or something to that effect. But an incredibly pissed Adrian Heath, disappointed in his side. It was interesting to get two such candid comments from two opposing coaches, but they actually, Adrian Heath's comments were really only about his team's performance. He barely mentioned anything about Petke or RSL.
Super sub Joao Plata came on in the 66th minute and scored twice in 8 minutes.
And isn't that bizarre that he's out as a sub? Like, and he's been questionable this season, but he certainly made his point.
I was trying to think of good RSL players last week, and I named Joao Plata, even though he's not consistently starting, which maybe is like a sign of their challenges.
Yeah. But we've seen that around the league, is teams aren't afraid to bench their best players or DPs, which some other teams might do well to take note of.
We talked a little bit about New York City, and I did think that in their win over Columbus, I believe it was a 2-0 win, Columbus was a little more able to handle the New York City attack than Montreal was. But I had written after the Montreal game, in which they used a lot of like counterattacking offense. Were they always this good, or has there really been an immediate impact from Dominic Tarrant? Because I do think that they're playing like they've always been dominant, but I do think I see something different from them than I used to.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good observation to make. I felt that way too. I don't know that I can really put my finger on what it is, but I was able to watch most of the City-Columbus game, and I thought Columbus plugged them up a little bit and were able to cope with them a little bit better, but New York City just seemed to have a couple of extra gears to them and just a few more ideas about, you know, if one approach wasn't working, they could do another, whereas in previous games and seasons and under Patrick Vieira, I think City's just sort of had the direct approach of, we'll just control possession, we're just going to keep firing balls into the box and trying to give it to David Villa until we score, which inevitably happens. But it's sort of been like a one-look squad, which then teams can figure out and exploit.
Yeah.
And now they look just a little bit more like they've got a few other ideas and approaches that they can have to create something.
They were able to pivot in that game against Toronto, which left an impression on me. It's weird because it's not like Vieira was doing poorly, but
no. Yeah, I mean, he put up a hell of a side, right? I felt like Columbus was a little unlucky in this one with a couple of their plays. Early on, they were really taking the game to New York and really looking like they might get an early goal or something out of it. But I think I've just dialed down the intensity a little bit. Zardes has kind of gone a little bit quiet. Everyone's looked pretty good for the most part. It's just that extra little bit of quality. And I'm wondering if Columbus is maybe perhaps looking to make some sort of move in the transfer window just to get some insurance policy. That being said, if there's no insurance that they'll be staying in Columbus, then they may not be too keen to spend a bunch of money.
Who knows what the franchise idea is at this point?
It's such a mess, and day to day, week to week seems to change.
Very unnecessary late red card in that game, I also got to say.
Oh, yeah.
One team that looked like they had thrown it away and was able to recoup their losses was LA Galaxy when they visited New England and came away with a 3-2 win. As I saw some New England fans complain about, without quote-unquote gimmick-citing Zlatan Ibrahimovic, he stayed home. But they were, I think, some of the things that I was the most impressed by in this game is I think they were able to defend a fair bit better than I'd seen him defend before.
Yeah, still a little frantic at times, but with a little bit more renewed, renewed vigor.
Yeah.
Ashley Cole has been up and down all season, but made a very important clearance off the line. I agree. I mean, they still gave up two goals. But we, you know, early on, it looked like New England had a way into this match, and it could be yet another just wasted one from LA Galaxy. But as we saw last week, too, New England's discipline problems are coming back to haunt them. And it's just such a silly kick from Pania that gets him sent off. Ironically, like 3 or 4 minutes later, Fagundes scores. So maybe they just are so familiar playing with 10 men now, that's what they need to get a goal.
I was fascinated by red card effects in this game because, you know, New England gets a red card, scores immediately, scores at the end of the half to maintain a lead up until Ashley Cole gets sent off. And then
yeah.
LA scores twice in 2 minutes. And it's like...
I do agree that LA Galaxy defended a little better in this game, but I think this game was more of two poor performances, and it was just who was going to score more goals rather than who did what well.
And this was a two goals in injury time performance, which I was very impressed by.
That's where the one thing that I will say that Galaxy deserves some credit on it is to press it, to get the late equalizer, and then to go ahead and win it. It's New England's fault for sitting back and just turning off their attention, I guess, but credit to Galaxy, because there's not a lot of teams that can finish a game off, come back from behind, tie it, and then win it within 4 minutes.
Is that what you think happened? Do you think that Cole gets sent off in the 85th and then New England basically think like, well, that must have stalled their momentum and take their own feet off the pedal a little bit?
I'm not sure. I just think Ziggy Schmidt demands a little bit more out of this side. And as we've seen, he's not a person that's afraid of sidelining mega names to have some effect. And he's asked certain other players to step in and get more involved in the play. So
I don't know that Zlatan's absence was a sitting as much as it was. I don't want to go to New England.
Oh, no. I meant more in terms of like questions being raised about the Dos Santos brothers.
Right, yes.
And sort of the decreased relevance of Alessandrini, although he was on the pitch and had an okay game. I think Ziggy Schmidt's also done a good job of nurturing other players on the squad to step up and go, like, you can't rely on your strikers to score all the goals, you know, and on those set pieces, you need to get your defenders and your midfielders into the box trying to get something out of it. And there seems to be more drive about the Galaxy now, like a little bit more sense of purpose that they can create something.
One thing that I was really taken aback by was the first game this week. Chicago losing 4-0 to 4-3 to Philadelphia at home. I have Schweinsteiger stores. I have how is this a draw written in my notes, and then underneath it in all caps, how is this a win?
And I feel like we can almost talk about the two Chicago games together.
Yeah.
First off, Chicago's in big trouble, and it's almost unfathomable at how much better they looked last season, how few changes they made this season, and how bad they've been this season. In the Chicago-Philadelphia game, my note was, even when Chicago finds that little something extra, they still falter.
Yeah.
And I think David Akam also has something to prove here and scores against his former club.
In, like, his, like, third good play of the season.
Yeah. But, like, Philadelphia has been able to turn the screw on numerous teams and capitalize on other sort of poor teams that have been in similar positions as them.
Yeah.
Credit to Philadelphia on this one.
Yeah.
But Chicago has just been so, so bad. And when you look at the Dallas game, they're just standing there. They're just flat for the whole game. Dallas is one of the most, like, they're one of the quickest teams in the league in terms of moving the ball around and player movement off the ball. They just move so much, and then you put out a lineup of people who are just standing there watching them run past them. I don't know if it was being demoralized from being beaten by Philadelphia, but they've been beaten by everyone. But there's no heart there, and no one's running. Like, there's just literally points where a Dallas player is able to just run past two Chicago defenders, and they're just sort of standing there watching or trying to catch them in an offside trap. It's horrendous performances from Chicago this week, despite scoring four goals across two games.
There was no answer to the Dallas attack. I thought that Kellen Acosta's second goal was a great example of using the extra man, because Chicago also had somebody sent off, Connor in the 70th. And again, before he gets sent off, this is a 1-0 game, and then they really used the extra man to create space for Acosta for that second goal. I did joke when Dallas has its penalty kick, Rito Ziegler took it, and I'm like, nice. Rito Ziegler took my winning 11-9 set pieces for Spurs as well. In like 2006.
Yeah. And he buried it too. Mm-hmm. Made no mistake about that one. So the answers for Chicago, I'm not quite sure, but like so many teams across the league, they need to figure out something in their back line, and I think make a few adjustments there, but it's up to the coaching staff to get those players fit and get them moving, because they've just got to be moving when they're out of possession and keep 11 players on the pitch, especially when you're playing a team like Dallas. I feel like as good as Dallas has been, Chicago just handed this one to them.
Yeah. What did you think? I don't have anything to say about Colorado Houston.
Nope. What did I say here? A battle of struggling minnows more than anything else.
It was a 0-0 draw.
And a couple of fan comments that I just happened to see that then I looked back and looked at the lineup, and this is an incredibly weak lineup from Houston as well. Just zero ambition to go and get a point. And Colorado, it played the most Colorado game that has ever Colorado'd.
People noted that Colorado, playing against his former team, acquired Giles Barnes, who played not a single game for Club Leon in Liga MX.
I think he made 3 appearances in the end.
Oh, I thought I saw that.
But maybe not league games. They might have been cup games.
I think that must be the case, because I had seen that he had only made two semantics, unused purely substitutions.
Yeah. So Giles Barnes is once again back in MLS. I think he has now officially played for every team in MLS, including Miami and Cincinnati that aren't even in the league yet. I wish him the best. I hope he does something for them. I wouldn't hold my breath, but a decent signing.
He's been seen at the construction site for sure.
And it's certainly better than nothing. At least he is an out and out striker.
Well, we've heard in the Miami Stadium hearings for for Beckham's MLS team that the famed player El Duke, Orlando Hernandez, appeared at the briefings arguing against having a stadium in the area. Well, I feel like Giles Barnes should go to the next ones to be like, listen, I need another team to play for.
You want a striker who has seen it all. Literally seen it all. I feel bad for the guy. Sometimes those things are just out of your control, but he's not been particularly good at anywhere he's gone in the last 5 or 6 years. But we wish him the best there, of course. Another kind of non-noticeable result, but is somewhat notable, is LAFC draws Portland 0-0. I just put here, it's kind of a fair result. LAFC controlled the match, but Portland did a really good job of countering.
Mm-hmm.
And both teams kind of did what they do best with the people they had. Yeah. The only other thing was Lee Wynn was sent off kind of foolishly. so he's continued that trend.
Lee Wynn, club. Lee Wynn, who's never made bad choices.
Yeah, exactly. But a fair result from those two sides. Didn't exactly have everything that you want out of a match. But I watched parts of it, and it was okay. And I think this was more of a case of versus Colorado, Houston, LAFC, Portland was more of two good teams who couldn't quite find the extra bit of something to get past the other one. But was a much better match to watch.
When they're cooking, they're not too dissimilar looking. So it's not that big a surprise to me that they cancel each other out.
No.
The other draw of the week, I actually thought was a great result for Seattle, who went into the Lions' den against Atlanta and emerged with a 1-1 draw. I thought that this, especially in the never-ending comeback story of the Sounders and of several teams this year, was a great performance in a tough place to play against really great opposition.
Yeah, and there was all kinds of shenanigans in this game. A couple of handballs in the box that went uncalled, and a ton of things that could have, should have been called. Martinez headbutted a player in the face, didn't get sent off. At this point, I feel like Martinez could come out with a chainsaw and chop a player's leg off and not get sent off. We know MLS likes to protect their stars just about anything. We've seen it with lots of players before. Kind of some weird non-penalty calls, but I agree. This is a really, really great result for Seattle to come in and just get something out of it. In a place that not many teams have been able to go in and get so much as a point. So they're beginning to look like a bit more of the Seattle of old, which does not bode well for the Whitecaps, who now have to go visit them this weekend.
Oh, not at all. One of the sneaky good goalkeeping performances that I saw this week was Stefan Fry saving an own goal, which I feel like you don't see too often. Like a ball comes off a defender and looks like it is definitely going into the net, and Fry is not only able to defend against Atlanta's attack, but also his own defense.
Zach Steffen can do it all, which is perhaps why in transfer news, apparently Bristol City is offering Columbus $4 million for the kid.
Oh, really? For Zach Steffen out of Columbus?
Yeah.
That was that would be interesting.
Sorry, I do this every time you say Stefan Fry. I just think about Zach Steffen. Embarrassing. Did you miss me, guys? Did you miss me? Who are we talking about? Stefan Fry saved the only goal out of the back of his net. Two different players. I'm back with it. I understand what's going on.
Hey, it's gonna be okay because Zach Steffen is apparently going to Bristol, so you won't have this problem anymore.
Exactly. Please, can you get rid of one of them so I stop? I just mishear the name, and I'm like, oh, it's weird he's talking about Columbus now. Dear. I do know that they're two different players. They're both very good goalkeepers, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I thought, you know, Atlanta had a lot of chances. Seattle did something that I don't know that I always see teams do against Atlanta, which is when Atlanta is able to run this header play against them that works for the first goal. Seattle adapt, and it doesn't work a second time.
Yeah, no, I feel like Seattle's problems this season has just been a lot of times just sort of lack of luck and trying to adapt to a bit of a new system. But I agree, their defense is showing signs of life, and like they are able to adapt within a game and not just let the game slip away from them, whereas, as you said, Atlanta can basically play the same play five times in a row and score five times, and defenders are just standing there and being like, oh, I didn't think he'd get it the third time. Like, every single Martinez goal looks almost exactly the same. There's two types of goals he scores, one with his foot, one with his head, and they're always the same in the same places.
Yeah.
The last game we have to talk about, I think, right?
I think we might have done it. I think we did it.
No, we got one more. New York Red Bulls versus Sporting Kansas City.
Oh.
Red Bulls won 3-2.
Yes, I actually do
And
have
this,
this in my notes too.
what did you think of this match?
I think that so Sporting Kansas City had a great strategy heading into this, which is doing the sort of crosses from the wide play quick. But it almost I think that New York was able to adopt that same. They were able to kind of mimic their opponent in that way, because that was sort of the strategy they also used on their second goal. It's what I think has been as Bradley Wright Phillips is great from any distance, but I think that some of these goals have been a little bit of poacher's goals.
Absolutely.
I don't know. I don't think. No, I'm trying to recall, and I don't have the score sheet in front of me, whether or not the second goal was also BWP. But
Can't recall as well. I should have
shame,
written down who scored.
shame he's not going to the All-Star game.
What's that?
Shame that Bradley Wright Phillips is not on the All-Star roster.
Yeah. I feel like some of the older players have been a little bit hard done by in that, but I also get sometimes coaches say, "You know what? Let's keep BWP at home for that one, not risk an injury in an All-Star game."
This is fair. Wright Phillips scores on the 4th minute, and then SKC are able to build up a 2-1 2-1 lead, and then Mark Rachowski, who I have written in my notes as Tchaikovsky, because I couldn't hear it any other way, is able
Close
to
enough. Are you
score
sure it's
twice.
not Zach Steffen?
I think it's Zach Steffen. I think Zach Steffen is also on this team.
He's everywhere.
But yeah, Sporting Kansas City has these great switching plays that are working right now. And they're working so well because I think on that first Sporting Kansas goal, which is Johnny Russell, it's not like rough. We sort of critique a lot of MLS goals where the player is not being covered, where the defense is not looking. But in this case, Russell was undercover. But because of how effective the switch was, he didn't have to do anything. It just pinged off him like it was the perfect play.
No, and Sporting Kansas City has gotten really good off of those set plays and finding Russell, finding others in the box. You know, I think it's a shame that they blew the lead, but it was kind of the same issue for both teams, is that again, they're just not stepping up to plays outside of the box. And so we know that both teams can score long-range shots or mid-range shots. And instead, they're so focused on marking the forwards who are in the box waiting to receive that they actually miss the guy who's now he's got 10 yards between him and the guy who's supposed to be marking him. He just winds up and cracks it in. And I think we saw with both goalkeepers as well, with Robles and Melia. Those are both kind of a weak point for them, is that both goalkeeper can be beat by long range shots when they've got eight players standing in front of them who are kind of screening it.
That's a good point. That's the alternative to, I know we were just talking about players not being, players not being covered enough, but you're right. If you flood the area, that becomes a flaw.
And I don't even know if that was intentional as much, because it kind of looked like once for SKC and twice for New York Red Bulls, they just sort of saw the opening where they were looking for a player on the wing. There wasn't one. So they just cut in, wind up, and have a crack at it. And, you know, neither Tim Melia or Luis Robles are particularly large goalkeepers. So they
No.
have less time to react, and they have to cover more distance to make the save. So I'd like to think it was purposeful, but I'm not sure that it was more just opportunistic from both teams. The interesting sort of connection off the field on this game is that, as we know, Jesse Marsh has left his coaching role with New York Red Bulls and has joined Leipzig?
Leipzig? I have no idea how you pronounce it.
Leipzig
Yeah.
as an assistant coach
Is
there.
he lip
But now
syncing?
there's Lipsync? FC Lipsync. But now there's rumors going around that he's going to take Adams with him, which would be a huge blow for New York Red Bulls to lose such a promising young player. But that's the word on the street.
Which goes back to the issue about him going there in the first place, which is the issue about having these connected clubs, is that New York Red Bulls are having such a good season. Why would you do this to yourself mid-season? Why would you do this to yourself mid-season?
Money.
I mean, you're not wrong.
No. But, I mean, it is also a great opportunity, and you don't expect that he just wants to stay as an assistant there, but he's got to get some European experience. He's, you know, arguably one of the best coaches in – well, not arguably. He's one of the best coaches in MLS, needs his next step, saw an opportunity and took it. Mm. So I do think he'll have success there. News-wise, what else have we got? Are we missing anything?
Quickly. We have a story in ESPN about apparently Marvell Wynn went in for heart surgery for a condition where his aorta wall was thin. And he was able to, you know, sort of do physical therapy and work his way back into playing shape with the Earthquakes until such point as MLS realized he wasn't going to feature that season, and they fucking cut him loose 3 months after surgery.
Jesus. Ain't no love in this league for anyone.
To which...
Well, that's shitty.
To which point he said, like, I would have... Like, if I had to retire after my surgery, that would have been fine, because then I wouldn't have had spent 3 months trying to get back onto the pitch.
Yeah. Rough.
Rough stuff. We have the now that DC has completed their stadium, their director of business operations has left, whose name is Tom Hunt, who's now going back to work with the Sacramento Kings. DC United supporters think this might have something to do with his role in critiquing Barra Brava, who is in the middle of one of three supporters clubs in the middle of an issue over the sale of tickets, because DC United, which used to sell tickets or allow all the supporters clubs to sell tickets, is now only allowing Screaming Eagles to do that. With the rationale that they kind of used to let supporters groups go whole hog with it. And in order to fill RFK, and now they don't have to / can't do that anymore.
Right.
Now, Stephen Goff of the Washington Post said that had nothing to do with anything. But, I mean, part of the comments was that he kind of low-key accused the supporters group of skimming money and then immediately left the club. But he said that it has more to do with you hire an executive to complete a big capital project and then they leave at the end of the capital project. But
yeah, stadium's built. There may just not be a whole lot left for him to do at this point, but interesting.
There are suggestions that the club is reaching out to the other two supporters groups and we might see a little bit better, more movement on that in the future. Other than that, I think that's what I had for news. Do you have anything?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know if people expected a little bit more talk about Wayne Rooney, and I'm not just being my usual Man U hating self and Rooney hating self. I thought he had a good game, but there's so much hype around him coming in that I felt like we could maybe use a bit of fresh air and not talk about a performance that was good, but ultimately not the thing that I think really powered them to their win.
Yeah, I didn't even see him. Well, in the meantime, where can we find you online?
You can find me live tweeting certain matches at That's So MLS on the Twitter. Where can we find you?
You can find me at Team Bates, www.team-bates.com. I am an editor for Howler Magazine. Go to howler.com. And you can find this podcast at thatsomls.com. And that's So MLS on iTunes and wherever you find your podcasts.
Yeah, please rate, review, and subscribe to the show.
And until next week, don't get sent off.
Or Mike Peck, he might have something to say about it.
Or you can get sent off and then score two goals.
True. Actually, you know what? Maybe just get sent off, because that could make your teammates rise to the occasion. You do you.
Noted.